Welcome to another edition of the Fanhouse MMA podcast. I'm Michael David Smith, and I'm happy to be joined once again by Versus.com and Fanhouse.com MMA reporter Ariel Helwani. Ariel, how are you doing?
MDS, I'm doing great. Great to be here again. Lots to discuss in another busy week of MMA, and I'm sure for you it's good to stop thinking a little bit about the NFL draft and talk about your other love, mixed martial arts.
Yes, exactly. It was a hectic weekend in some respects because of the NFL draft. It was a little bit of a slow news week in the MMA world, and yet we still had quite a bit at Fanhouse that I think we can discuss, and I'm looking forward to it. When you look back at this last week in MMA, you and I both had a couple of interviews, had some breaking news. What do you think is the big story in MMA of the week?
Surprisingly, or maybe not so surprisingly, I think the big story really was Kyle Maynard making his amateur MMA debut. I think that just because he is such a huge mainstream star, given the publicity he received a couple of years ago, winning the ESPY Award, he's, you know, been covered in the New York Times, USA Today, made appearances on Larry King Live. Everyone who is a, you know, quasi sports fan knows who Kyle Maynard is, and just because of how unique his story is, being congenital amputee and defying the odds, having a successful high school wrestling career, now jumping into amateur MMA, whether or not, you know, this is actually something serious that he wants to pursue, I have my doubts, but it was still a big deal for the sport to see him compete, and it was a big deal to see how people would cover it. Would they cover this like, oh, you know, look how crazy this MMA sport is, like it's just a bunch of freaks going out there and they're trying to exploit Kyle Maynard, or would people be giving Kyle Maynard props? And surprisingly, I actually thought that a lot of the coverage was pretty positive leading into the bout and pretty positive coming out of it, and we could talk about what happened, but I was really concerned that people would rip MMA for, you know, allowing Kyle to do this, and obviously fighting in Alabama, an unsanctioned state, there really is no one other than the promoter that has to allow him to do this. But overall, he didn't get injured, so it was okay, and I really think that it didn't turn into a black eye on the sport of mixed martial arts.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. It is the biggest story of MMA. You know, I actually I had ESPN News on yesterday looking for some NFL draft updates. And I saw a highlight of Kyle Maynard's fight from the night before, which is rare. I mean, it's very rare for ESPN News to show MMA highlights. I don't they don't always do it for big UFC fights, so it's especially interesting that they did it for Kyle Maynard. But he is an interesting story. There may be some people listening to us who don't know a lot about him. One thing to keep in mind about Kyle Maynard, he was a good high school wrestler. I mean, he wasn't. He's a congenital amputee, no arms, no legs, but wasn't someone that they just allowed on the wrestling team because they wanted to help him feel like he belonged or something. I mean, he was a good high school wrestler. He won, I want to say he won something like 90% of his high school wrestling matches. He's an extremely strong young man with a very strong torso, very strong pectoral muscles. You watch him lifting weights with his very short arms. He's clearly a very good athlete. And, you know, his MMA fight was interesting. The guy he fought was a fairly inexperienced fighter by the name of Brian Fry, who beat him by unanimous decision. And pretty much, you know, he had the right game plan. He treated it like a legitimate opponent, which is exactly what he should have done. And he said, okay, I know that Kyle can't punch or kick me. Kyle's only chance is to pull me down and use his wrestling skills, so I'm not going to let him do that. I'm going to move. I'm going to hit Kyle, and I'm going to move away before he can get a one-legged takedown. And that's exactly what he did. He did the right thing. He won 30-27 on all three judges' scorecards. I've heard that he was booed in the arena. Fry, I'm referring to. If he was, that's unfortunate because he didn't do anything wrong. He took it. He did exactly what Kyle Maynard wanted, which is Kyle Maynard said, I want to be treated like any other athlete. Brian Fry came in with a game plan, used that game plan effectively, and won the fight. I think it ultimately is good for MMA that a good young man like Kyle Maynard is getting involved. And although obviously we can't pretend there are no limitations on what Kyle Maynard can do. He can't punch and kick the way that Brian Fry or any other young MMA fighter can, but Kyle Maynard deserves a lot of credit for going in there and trying his best, and ultimately I think it was a good thing for MMA that this got some attention.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I think this should be one and done for Kyle Maynard. It's just the fact of the matter is that every time he fights, whoever he's fighting is going to, if they're smart, would pretty much put out the same game plan as Brian Fry did. There's no reason to try to go down there. And you know, the fans were booing Brian. Obviously, everyone wants to see Kyle succeed. And, you know, he's just such an inspiration to everyone. But, you know, MMA is a sport where there's, you know, striking and punching and kicking. And unfortunately, Kyle Maynard can't do that. The same reason why he, you know, can't try out for the NBA. That's just, you know, the way it is. So I think that it was great for one shot. I'm totally for it. I think it was remarkable that he was able to overcome any fears that he might have had about getting punched in the face and stick around for three rounds. That's commendable in itself. But this should really be it, and this should just be another great chapter in his life. I don't want to see him, and I really don't believe that this is actually something that he's, you know, looking to you know, pursue in his career. He tried to get sanctioned in Georgia 2 years ago, actually 3 years ago, and he was unsuccessful. And now, you know, he comes back 3 years later. So just by the fact that he waited so long makes me think that, you know, it was something that worked well for his schedule, and he was able to fit it in. And he obviously took it seriously. I mean, he was training with some really tough guys, Brian Bowles being one of them, a WEC bantamweight contender. But at the end of the day, I just don't think MMA is in the cards for Kyle Maynard.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that Kyle Maynard, wrestling is his real sport, and unfortunately, wrestling doesn't have the same pro circuit that MMA does. But I think it's been great to see a number of other amputees now have gone into wrestling after seeing the success that Kyle Maynard has. You know, there was a young man with one leg who advanced very far in the NCAAs this year. Wrestling is a great sport for amputees. It's a sport that that amputees have had a lot of success in, and I think Kyle was a real trailblazer. I think there are a lot of young people who like Kyle, have had limbs amputated or were born without limbs, and I think it's really exciting to see that wrestling is a sport that they're getting more involved in thanks to Kyle Maynard. MMA, probably not as realistic for them to get involved in, as you said, but still, Kyle Maynard, great young man, great to see that he's given sports a try. I also want to get into, I think Kyle Maynard has been a great story, but, you know, there are a lot of interesting stories that we had this week in the professional MMA circuit, and a big one, I think, is what's going on with Bobby Lashley, very popular professional wrestler, trying now to get into MMA. What are your thoughts on where we're going to see Bobby Lashley next and how successful he's going to be?
Well, he's going to be fighting next for the Maximum Fighting Championship coming up later on in May, going up against Mike Cook, who fans of BET's Iron Ring, and I know that might, you know, that might be weird thing to say, fans of BET's Iron Ring. I don't know many people who are actually fans of the show. But anyhow, he was featured in that show and did actually pretty well for himself and has fought on Elite XC card. So that's a tough fight for him. But I'm a little curious as to the direction that Bobby Lashley is going. He appeared last week at a Total Nonstop Action pay-per-view, which is a wrestling promotion, kind of like the number two competitor to World Wrestling Entertainment. And you know, Bobby has done okay for himself in his first two MMA fights. He's trying to shed this wrestler label off of him, and now he jumps right back into the wrestling world in the midst of his MMA career. I don't know if that's such a great idea. I mean, obviously, if TNA is throwing a lot of money his way, then, you know, more power to him. But I'd love to see him focus 100% of his attention on MMA. Lord knows he made a lot of money with World Wrestling Entertainment, so it's not like he's struggling right now and needs to earn a little extra cash. And plus, I don't like the fact that he's booking so many fights in advance. He's got this fight with Mike Cook coming up, then he's got a fight on June 27th against Bob Sapp. Then he's got another fight just announced with the XFC promotion later on this fall. I don't like when MMA fighters or boxers or any combat sports fighters do that. I like when they focus on one fight at a time and don't try to book up a schedule. You don't really see that in the UFC or in Strikeforce or anything like that. So I hope he's just not trying to like get a bunch of fights, make some money, and leave. He's been actually very humble, and you know, even said that he'd be willing to go into the Ultimate Fighter to make it to the UFC. He said that his end goal is obviously to make it to the UFC, and I just like him to take one fight at a time and focus 100% of his attention on MMA. Other than that, I think he's a great prospect. I was impressed with him against Jason Guida. His performance, I thought he did very well under tough circumstances. But again, I just think that he might be biting off a little more than he could chew at this point, especially facing a veteran like Bob Sapp. He might be looked at as a joke now, but Sapp has been there against the likes of Antonio Minotauro Nogueira. He's fought in Pride. He has some skills, and that might be a tough matchup for him.
Yeah, well, I was not particularly impressed with Bobby Lashley against Jason Guida. I really thought that was a fight that he had such a size and strength advantage that I would have liked to see him finish that fight. And I also think that against Bob Sapp, if Bob Sapp is in any kind of shape, and he looked like he was in decent shape when he fought on New Year's Eve in Japan, Bob Sapp is gonna be bigger and stronger than Bobby Lashley. And I'm not sure that Bobby Lashley is ready to take on a guy who has a size and strength advantage over him. So I'm going to be very interested in seeing that. But I agree with you. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to be booking these fights in advance. He needs to take it one at a time. And I don't know. I don't know if he really has a plan for becoming a high-quality MMA fighter. You know, he's been compared to Brock Lesnar because they're both former pro wrestlers who were also college wrestlers. But no one should be under any illusions. You know, he wasn't as good a college wrestler as Brock Lesnar. He's not as big as Brock Lesnar. He's not as strong as Brock Lesnar. He's a year older than Brock Lesnar. It's just not really realistic for anyone to think he's going to be that kind of guy. But if he, you know, if he brings some attention to some smaller shows, I don't have any problem with that. But I think you and I are in agreement that Bobby Lashley maybe needs to get a little bit sharper of a focus on where exactly his MMA career is headed.
Yeah, and you know, he's fighting at the end of May. Then he's coming back almost a month later to fight Bob Sapp. I'd like to see him, you know, prepare for the next 2 months for Bob Sapp. I don't want to see him, you know, just squeeze in a bunch of fights, you know, every month just so he can pad his record. Because, you know, MMA is a lot different than, you know, boxing or even amateur boxing, where a guy's trying to, you know, win as many fights as he can, and then obviously has a nice record, and then he starts to get recognized. You could be recognized as an MMA fighter if you're 4-0 or 5-0. And the other problem that I have is, you know, he's now booked, let's say, up to September. I think that Bobby Lashley has a home right now in Strikeforce. I you know, obviously Scott Coker has mentioned that they've discussed the future together a little bit. I don't know how those discussions have gone. Obviously, you know, nothing concrete has happened, but you know, if he defeats Bob Sapp in June, I don't see why Strikeforce wouldn't sign him right away. Now that's not going to happen. So, you know, is he going to the places that are just going to throw a lot of money his way, or is he trying to get on the big shows, you know, get some more exposure, and then eventually fight in the UFC? So that's why I just think that, you know, everything is just very weird right now in Bobby Lashley's career. And on top of that, doing the wrestling thing, I just don't think it's the smart thing to do. In Japan, the fans are used to seeing that. In North America, they're not. And while MMA might be, you know, kind of the evolution of pro wrestling in terms of the fans that grew up loving pro wrestling are now MMA fans, fine. But I think a lot of MMA fans don't really want to be compared to pro wrestling fans, don't want to have anything to do with pro wrestling. And now when they see this guy who was a pro wrestler, then trying to be taken seriously in the world of MMA, now dabbling again in the world of pro wrestling, it's going to turn off a lot of fans.
Yeah, I think you're right. And speaking of something that shows the difference between American and Japanese fans and maybe will turn off some American fans, what do you make of the idea of Fedor Emelianenko taking on Shinya Aoki in a special sparring exhibition, the rules of which, by the way, have still not been completely revealed? What is going on there?
I have no idea what is going on there. And we've seen some really weird stories in the last year in MMA. This probably is the weirdest of them all. I never in a million years would have thought that these two guys, a guy who generally fights as a lightweight, considered one of the best lightweights in the world, fighting the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, a heavyweight. And I don't care if it's arm wrestling. These guys shouldn't be in the same ring or arena together. It absolutely makes no sense. And I mean, like we've said before, I would definitely watch it. Anyone wants to watch something where, you know, two of the best fighters in the world are competing against each other. And because it's absolutely absurd is one of the reasons why I want to watch it. But, wow, Japanese promoters, God bless them. They have a great imagination, and once again, they prove that this is something that we'd never see in the United States, and I don't think it's going to make much news in the United States. I think because it's not an MMA match and because we might put a little more stock into how popular Aoki and Fedor are in the United States, but for the hardcore MMA fans, this is a bizarre one, but something that they'll all be trying to get online come Thursday morning.
Yeah, and, it's interesting. Fedor Emelianenko is the best fighter in the world. He's, in my opinion, he's the best in the brief history of the sport of MMA. But Dana White, the president of the UFC, criticizes Fedor, and I think justifiably so, for not taking on the top competition regularly the way the fighters in the UFC basically have to, because the UFC tells them who they're going to fight next. It doesn't sit right with me that this is where we're seeing Fedor again. It has now been more than 3 months since Fedor knocked out Andrei Arlovsky. I'm ready for them to announce who he's going to fight in MMA next, and I'm hoping it's going to be a legitimate opponent, one of the top 10 heavyweights, maybe Josh Barnett, maybe Alistair Overeem. And instead, we're going to see him in some weird sparring exhibition with Shinya Aoki. We still have no idea when or where we'll see him after that, and we still have no idea if it'll be against anybody who is remotely accomplished in MMA or if it'll just be against some big, tough-looking guy, which, a lot of Japanese fans apparently are okay with. Apparently, there's a market in Japan for Fedor against a big, tough-looking guy, whereas you and I and the vast majority of American fans say, wait a minute, we don't care if the guy's tough-looking. We care if Fedor is taking on a guy who's actually good at MMA, someone who's actually a legitimate challenge to the best fighter in the world. And I'm a little worried that it's going to be a long time before we see that. And that is really a shame, because Fedor is the best in the world. It's too bad he's not fighting the best in the world regularly.
Yeah, you bring up a great point, and one that really, I think, tarnishes Fedor's career at this point. Because, like you said, the GSPs and the BJ Penns, and I'm not going to say Anderson Silva, but the light heavyweight champion, it changes a lot in the UFC nowadays. But they're all being tested. Every time they go out there, they're being tested, and Fedor Emelianenko is not testing himself, and he's part of an organization like M1, which is able to work with other organizations, and they might not even have the ability to book a top 10 fighter today against Fedor 3 months after his victory over Arlovsky, but they could put him in a real MMA match. I don't know why they're wasting their time with something like this, and it definitely, at the end of the day, when you look back on Fedor's career, you have to say, was he pushing himself, and was he testing himself against the best? Arlovsky and Sylvia are definitely worthy opponents, but you look at before then, Hongman Choi, prior to that, Matt Lenlin, a guy who usually fights at 185, some very questionable decisions, and obviously his management team is responsible for some of those questionable decisions. But you're right, 3 months after a fight where it only lasted 3 minutes and 14 seconds, he should be fighting again. Whether or not it's in Affliction or M1 or some kind of co-promotion, there's no reason for him to be doing this type of thing. And it does say a lot about his career, because if he was truly driven to prove that he is the best, I think that he would say, listen, get me fights. I want to fight in real MMA matches. I want to smash as many people as possible. Instead, he's doing something like this, which is one of the strangest decisions, I think, that any MMA champion has ever made.
Yeah, it would be like some great golfer, just, an unbelievably great golfer says, I don't like the PGA Tour, And I also don't like how the folks at Augusta National run things. And I really don't like how the U.S. Open and the British Open are run. So I'm not going to do any of those competitions. And I'm just going to do little, you know, events at golf courses all over the world, at whatever golf course my managers and I can agree to go compete at. And, you know, maybe this golfer really is phenomenal and really is, you know, just blowing away the field in all these small tournaments. But at some point you say, I want to see him going up against the best. I want to see this guy at the Masters. And it's like that with Fedor. He is the best. I don't think there are many people left who even dispute. He's certainly the best heavyweight. I don't think there are many people left who even dispute that he's the best pound-for-pound fighter. But he doesn't test himself enough, and it really is too bad. And I would like to think, you know, I kind of had a back and forth with some of the commenters at FanHouse. Some were saying, well, you know, he'll be back at Affliction 3 against Josh Barnett and he'll prove how great he is. I'm not convinced that's going to happen. I'm not convinced there's going to be an Affliction 3. I'm not convinced that if there is, he's going to fight Josh Barnett. I want to see Fedor in legitimate MMA competitions 3 or 4 times a year, and I don't think we're going to get that in 2009. I think that's very disappointing. I think we can also move on. You know, we haven't talked at all about the UFC. I think we'll get to that, but I think there are a couple of other non-UFC fighters we can talk about. One you talked to is Gina Carano. When do you think we're going to see Gina Carano in the cage again?
I truly think that we'll see her back in action come August. It just seems like all signs are pointing to her, agreeing on her new contract with Strikeforce. I'm actually surprised that it's taken this long because her management team, the Wasserman Media Group, has a relationship with Strikeforce. I thought that it would have been completed a little earlier. But, you know, money is money and business is business. And she is by far, you can make a case, the most underpaid MMA fighter in the world. So she definitely deserves to get a little, you know, hike up in her contract. And I think she's committed to being a fighter. I know a lot of people have questioned whether or not she's committed with all these new opportunities that she's getting, endorsement deals and all that. But as she mentioned to me, it's the one thing that she truly feels comfortable in doing. When she does these commercials and when she, you know, poses in magazines, she feels a little bit out of her element. And I still think that she has a long ways to go in her career, and she has a lot that she wants to prove. She's very young. She hasn't fought the best of the best in female MMA, and I know there aren't that many out there. But until she fights someone like Cyborg and maybe down the road a super fight against someone like Tara LaRosa, I think that she won't feel like she accomplished what she wanted to accomplish in mixed martial arts. The big question is, and as she talked about in the interview, will we ever see Gina Carano in the UFC or fighting for Zuffa with World Extreme Cage Fighting? She seems very into doing that, and she's not worried about the way she'll be booked or the way she'll be promoted. And I think that could be huge for female MMA. I just don't believe that we're going to see it anytime soon. I know that Zuffa has talked to her. I know Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta, the Zuffa co-owners, have discussed the future with Gina Carano in Zuffa. But I just don't see the UFC, with all the flack that they receive for every little negative thing that happens, whether it's Dana White, you know, lashing out against Loretta Hunt on a video blog, or Anderson Silva's performance, or, you know, steroids, whatever, then bringing in a female MMA division and a female fighter like Gina Carano, which can open up another huge can of worms for their detractors, especially when there aren't even 10, you know, great MMA fighters who are females that fight in her division that would make sense to open up a new female division. So I just don't see it happening anytime soon. I think her home will be in Strikeforce, and I think she'll make some money there and then move on to some other things on the mainstream level.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I would love to see either the UFC or the WEC add women's fights. I don't think they're interested at all in adding a full women's division. I think they are interested in promoting some women's fights if they get the right fight. But right now, the right fight has to involve Gina Carano. There's only one fight that makes sense, or there's only one fighter that makes sense. I don't think it has to be Carano versus Cyborg. I think it has to be Carano versus somebody, though, and so that's really the only option open to them. And I also think, by the way, if we are going to see Zuffa add a woman or add multiple women, add maybe even at some point a women's division, but I don't think we're going to see that. But women's fights under the Zuffa banner will be in the WEC. I think it's pretty clear that that's what they would do. And I think it would be a huge boost. I think Gina Carano, if they added Gina Carano, you know, in time for, say, their August show, which is probably going to have Miguel Torres on it, which, as I reported last week, is going to have Takaya Mizugaki against Jeff Curran on it. If they added Gina Carano to that, boy, would that be a great show, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. I really think that she is going to sign with Strikeforce any week now or any day now, and I agree, too. I think it would be a great boost for World Extreme Cage Fighting just because it will go another step towards differentiating WEC from UFC. WEC right now is trying to carve out its own little place in the MMA world and especially trying to differentiate itself from its sister organization. But if they bring in the women's division, then it's a whole different situation because now they're really different from the UFC. They have a whole, you know, it's not just lighter fighters. It's a whole, you know, a whole other can of worms that you're dealing with. But I just don't think
it'd be a completely different atmosphere if they got women, no question about it. And it'd be a great atmosphere. I would love it.
It would be great, but I don't think that MMA fans, and particularly the fans that go to WEC and UFC events, are into seeing, you know, Shayna Baszler versus some other female fighter. I don't think they're into seeing even Cyborg against you know, another female fighter. I think that they're only into seeing Gina Carano fight. And I think from a credibility standpoint, you just can't have Gina Carano fight every 4, 5, 6 months and that's it, and not promote any other fighters. Elite XC, you know, much props to them. They tried to build a female division. They even put a female fight on CBS, which is a pretty coveted, you know, little 15 minutes that they had there in their second show. And they showed that they were, you know, they were committed to doing this. I just don't see Zuffa doing that kind of thing on Versus if they can't get, you know, a clone of Gina Carano times five. So it's a great idea in theory, but I just don't believe that they really, at the end of the day, want to open up, you know, all this argument from so many of their detractors saying, oh, you guys are, you know, crazy for putting on MMA fights, and now you're getting women all bloodied up too. Not worth it for them at this point.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, I thought when Affliction was passing money out left and right, I thought that after Elite XC went under and Affliction was still trying to build up their second show, I thought it could have been huge if they had found a way to make it work to get the contracts of Gina Carano and Chris Cyborg and get that fight way back in January. Obviously, it just didn't work out. It took forever for the whole Elite XC mess to get figured out. But, you know, as long as we're talking about Affliction, you had an interesting item about Tom Atencio. What are his future plans, the vice president of Affliction?
Yeah, this is, again, we've got a nice theme brewing this week. A lot of strange news coming out of the world of mixed martial arts. Tom Atencio, the VP of Affliction Entertainment, announced that he will be fighting on that June 27th card headlined by Bobby Lashley and Bob Sapp. This is, I guess you could call it an up-and-coming promotion. It's got some pretty good fights on it. Gilbert Ivel against Pedro Hizo. Chris Hordeski is also going to be fighting on the card in Mississippi. But I just think it's one of the weirdest things that I've ever heard for an actual MMA promoter, not only to be fighting, but to be fighting on another card, not his own. And I understand he mentioned that, you know, the folks at Affliction and Trump were a little hesitant to have him fight on an Affliction card because he actually has a job to do. And it would kind of be hard to go out and promote the event and also prepare for a fight. But it doesn't really send out a good signal to the fans when you say, hey, you know, we're supposed to be putting on a card this summer, but before we do that, our boss, the face of our company, is going to go out and fight on some other, you know, pay-per-view card in Mississippi. It looks very strange, and I don't really see what he has to prove by doing this. He surely has a lot on his plate right now with Affliction. They've got a boatload of problems. They're trying to create their own spot in the MMA world. Why even, you know, take out the next 2 months and train for a fight you're not trying to be a fighter. You're 42 years old. It really doesn't make any sense to me. And it really sends me a signal saying that Affliction is in a lot bigger trouble than I thought they were. I would have bet any money in the world that we're going to see a third and possibly fourth show. And now I'm a little bit concerned that that's actually going to happen. Michael D. Cohen, who is the special counsel to Donald Trump and the COO of Affliction, who knows what exactly his role is with the promotion, but he guaranteed me that we'll be seeing Affliction Entertainment well into 2010. Now I have to question whether or not that's happening with Tom Atencio fighting. So I think it's a very weird choice, and I think a very ill-advised choice.
Yeah, and speaking of strange choices on June 27th involving Affliction, the guy who was in the Affliction main event at their last show, Andrei Arlovsky, his trainer Freddie Roach told me that Andrei Arlovsky is now turning his attention to boxing, and he too will be fighting on June 27th, a different show. This is a Golden Boy Promotions boxing show. It's interesting. Andrei Arlovsky, it's not a complete surprise. He has talked about trying a boxing match in the past, but he did announce a date. He says June 27th is set, although he doesn't have an opponent yet. But Golden Boy has a show June 27th, and all indications are Andrei Arlovsky will be boxing on it. Do you think it's a good idea for Andrei Arlovsky to do this? And Freddie Roach told me he thinks Andrei Arlovsky is pretty much focused exclusively on boxing. What do you think the future of Andrei Arlovsky is?
As an MMA fan, I'm a little annoyed to see Arlovsky try his hand at boxing. I think that he does have a future in MMA. I mean, prior to getting knocked out for a very ill-advised flying knee attempt against Fedor in January, he was winning that fight and had a great chance to actually dethrone Fedor. And now we see him focusing his attention on the sport of boxing. But you know what? Again, like we were talking about earlier with Bobby Lashley, if he can go out and make more money at this point in his career in boxing, and I don't know if that's possible for him, but he is sort of a big name. He's not exactly some, you know, Joe Schmo just trying to work his way up the ranks. Then more power to him. I question at this point in his career if he can develop into a good boxer, because as we all know, MMA fighters aren't the greatest boxers out there. Even the guys who we consider to be good boxers, like BJ Penn, really have very unorthodox styles, and I think that they would get knocked out very easily if they fought a full-time boxer in a boxing match. So I really think it's a strange decision. We really have to assess this decision once we see who his opponent is. Is it some guy who's, 5-0, or is it some actual veteran of the sport? So that's why I'm reserving judgment. I don't know, if Freddie talked about, maybe one day having him face someone like Valuev, or who knows, maybe even someone like Klitschko, Vladimir Klitschko. I don't see him ever doing that. I see him, maybe trying this once or twice and then going back into MMA. And a final point on Arlovsky, I really am going to believe it when I see it, because this is like the third or fourth time that we've heard that he's going to be making his boxing debut, and neither of those times has it happened. So I really want to reserve judgment before we actually see him step into a boxing ring wearing those gloves.
Yeah, it's strange. I have talked to Andre in the past, and I haven't talked to him since the Fedor fight, but when I talked to him in the past, he sounded completely focused on MMA, on fighting Fedor. Obviously, if that fight had gone differently, I don't think there's any chance he would be considering boxing right now. I think if he were the undisputed heavyweight champion of MMA, he'd be looking for another big MMA fight. But now that he has lost to Fedor, I guess, based on everything Freddie Roach told me, based on also I've talked to Richard Schaefer, the head of Golden Boy Promotions, about Andrei Arlovsky, and he thinks very highly of Andrei's abilities in boxing. I guess they're going to give it a try, but I tend to agree with you that I don't know that it's a very good idea. It just seems like a strange decision for a guy who's had a lot of success in MMA to now give a try to boxing, but I guess that is what they're going to do.
And what does it say, by the way, about Fedor Emelianenko, where the two guys who he defeated are now going to try their hand at boxing, Tim Sylvia being the first, doing this weird boxing exhibition match against Ray Mercer, and now Andrei Arlovsky. It seems as though once you step in the ring with Fedor lately, then you're like, you know what, screw this MMA thing.
Yeah, I think you're right. Fedor kind of drains the will of the MMA fighter when you've been hit by Fedor, knocked out by Fedor, choked out by Fedor. It makes you question whether you ever want to fight MMA again, apparently, and you think, oh, maybe boxing is easier than MMA after you've lost to Fedor. But, of course, it's not like Sylvia and Arlovsky are fighting the heavyweight champions of boxing. Sylvia is fighting a guy who was a heavyweight champion a very long time ago. Arlovsky, we don't even know who he's going to fight next. But, yeah, in both cases, Fedor kind of saps their will to continue in MMA, and that tells you something about Fedor. Strange times for Fedor and for his last two opponents and for the promoter who put those fights together. It's very bizarre. I suppose we should talk about the big leagues of MMA, the UFC. I talked to Matt Hughes last week, and he said he doesn't think Chuck Liddell should retire. He likes what Chuck Liddell is doing. He says Chuck should keep going. Kenny Florian made a similar comment. Frank Mir made a similar comment. Do you think that maybe we're starting to hear a little bit of a backlash that, yes, Dana White wants Chuck Liddell to retire? Yes, a lot of fans think it's time. Yes, a lot of journalists think it's time. But fighters are saying, wait a minute, you don't get to tell us when we want to retire. We're going to decide for ourselves when we want to retire.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you phrased it that way, because I don't think it's backlash in terms of, you know, looking at Chuck Liddell's career and looking at what he's done in his last few fights and saying, okay, can he be in the ring and actually put up a good fight against the best of the best? That's not the case here. The case, I think, is you're hearing a lot of fighters say, wait a second, like you said, you know, who's Dana White to tell us when we should retire? And you know what? I agree with them. I think that I was very surprised at how forceful Dana was with his words, and how, you know, convinced he was that this was it for Chuck Liddell, and pretty much putting those words in Liddell's mouth. And then at the post-fight press conference, people asking Liddell, and he wasn't, you know, announcing his retirement right then and there. He said he was going to think about it. So it's a little strange, because like we said last week, you'd never see, you know, someone like Roger Goodell announce that Brett Favre was done and retiring. It's usually up to the athlete himself. And I think that a guy like Chuck Liddell deserves the respect in terms of saying, okay, now I'm ready. And I think that Dana could have said, you know what, my two cents here, I think he's done, but I'm going to give him that respect and let him call it quits when he's ready. We all know what kind of relationship they've had in the past, and we all know how much Dana White has, you know, the most respect and love in the world for Chuck. But I think that he went a little too far, and I think that he should have, you know, allowed Chuck Liddell to go out on his own terms. If Chuck wants to fight one more time, I think he actually deserves it. I don't think that he should be fighting a top 10 competitor, but I don't see why he can't fight someone like a James Irvin type of fighter. You know, maybe he has nothing left to prove in that sense, but if he wants to fight, I think he deserves to fight, and I think that he can actually hang in there and win. His last three losses have come to, you know, top five fighters. Three of the best light heavyweights in the world, Quinton Jackson, Rashad Evans, Mauricio Shogun Hua, and he defeated Wanderlei Silva. So it's not like he's going out there and losing to complete jokes. He's putting up a good fight, and won that first round against Evans, and you know, looked pretty good against Shogun before getting caught. So I'm not surprised that guys like Hughes and Florian are saying things like that. And I give them a lot of props for doing so. It's nice to see the fighters sticking up for each other. But then on the flip side, you hear a guy like Jay Glazer, who I spoke to last week, who's a friend of Chuck's and who is somewhat of a MMA analyst, who then says, you know what, let's be smart here. Chuck is done.
Yeah, and you know, it's real interesting. I talked to Ken Shamrock a couple of months ago, and I told him, you know, your fans don't want to see you fighting in these small-time shows. You know, he had been on a five-fight losing streak, and then he beat a fat, out-of-shape guy. And, you know, I said to him, fans don't want to see that. And he said to me, and I think he made a very good point, that's selfish. It's not up to the fans to tell me, after I've been in this sport, in the case of Ken Shamrock, as long as the sport has existed, really, It's not up to the fans to tell me when it's time to retire. I'll decide that for myself, thank you very much. And, you know, I don't necessarily agree with these guys hanging on after they're past their prime, but if they can pass a physical conducted by a state athletic commission, I don't know that there's much you can do to force a fighter to retire. And in the case of Chuck Liddell, you know, I personally don't know that I want to see him keep fighting, but if he does want to keep fighting, if he feels strongly that he can, and as you point out, it's not like he's lost to a bunch of scrubs. He's lost to four of the top 10 light heavyweights in the world and beaten one of the top 10 light heavyweights in the world in his last five fights. You know, I think it's going to be hard to keep him away, and I think there's a decent chance that we're still going to see Chuck Liddell, even though I certainly the UFC would prefer that he step away.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing is in a year, Chuck Liddell is going to be bored out of his mind. This is a guy that's fought his entire career, whether it's you know, wrestling, kickboxing, MMA, and now he's going to be like, you know what, I want to fight. What's Dana White going to do then? I wonder if they're going to say, you know, here's X amount of dollars, just please don't go fight. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that Liddell's going to fight this thing. We've never seen combat sports fighters, especially guys that have experienced the type of fame and, you know, all the money that he's made and all the, you know, the fan love that he's received. I don't think a guy like Chuck Liddell is just going to say, you know what, see ya, I'm done. Guys like him that have experienced the kind of success that they have usually have a hard time saying goodbye. Just look at someone like, you know, I mean, anyone. You know, you mentioned any great heavyweight champion, the exceptions to the rule are the ones that, you know, said, you know what, I'm going out at the top of my game. It doesn't happen, and I don't think Chuck Liddell is going to do that. It's going to be really interesting in a year's time with so many competitors out there and so many people willing to throw a lot of money his way, how the UFC is going to deal with this, because they might want him to be an ambassador of some sorts. They might want him to go to Afghanistan and talk to the troops and all that. I don't think that's what Chuck wants to do at this point. And even talking to John Hackelman before his loss to Mauricio Shogun, who he said, we're going to go do this thing as long as Chuck wants to, even if he keeps on losing. If Chuck wants to do it, I support him, and we're going to keep doing it. And that told me that in their mind, this was not one and done for them. They really want to keep going. And it's really a thing like, you know, if they were willing to continue their career, win or lose against Mauricio Shogun Hua, no matter how he lost against him last Saturday night, I don't see why they would say, you know what, we were building on something. We're going to work some more with ATT. We're going to try to switch things up. We still got it in us to keep this thing going. And I truly believe that in a year's time, it's going to be a very interesting story to chronicle how the UFC is going to deal with Chuck Liddell really wanting to fight again.
It will be really interesting, no doubt about that. I don't know how it's all going to turn out, but it's not going to be that it quite as quiet as maybe we thought it was going to be a week ago. I think, you know, there are going to be some twists and turns along the way. And you know, the fun thing about MMA, Ariel, is this past week there really wasn't much going on, and yet here you and I have been talking for I think about 45 minutes now or something, and we had a lot of good stuff at Fan House this past week. MMA, there's no off season, even in a week when there aren't a lot of big fights. There's always plenty to talk about, and Ariel, it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely, same here. I echo those sentiments. Today you have you know, Rich Franklin saying he's going to train with Anderson Silva again to prepare for Wanderlei Silva. There's always some kind of controversy, some kind of hype, some kind of little drama brewing in MMA, and that's why I love the sport so much. And you know, I'll say that I love talking about it with you every week here on the Fan House MMA podcast. I know that sounded corny, but I really mean it.
No, and it doesn't sound corny to me, Ariel. It's still real to me, Ariel. With that said, thank you very much for joining me, and let's do it again next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Fan House MMA podcast.